Peace be upon you. God willing, today we're going to talk about what God has to say according to the Quran in the concept of liberty. What's funny is when you look across the quote-unquote Muslim world, you look at Saudi Arabia, Iran, Afghanistan, you know, these claim to be Islamic states, they couldn't be farther away from the truth as far as what God advocates in the Quran. Literally, they're running their society completely backwards to the verses in the Quran, and really wanted to spend some time and talk about what does God actually say in the Quran about freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, property rights, and just overall how a believing society should operate. So one of the concepts of the Quran is that God left the Quran to cover all aspects of our salvation. And it's the final testament, so it's supposed to basically last us from today to the end of humanity. And in the Quran, God talks about not just how to conduct ourselves during peacetime, but also how to conduct ourselves during war and how to run a society. And one of the underlying umbrella rules of the Quran is what's known as the non-aggression principle, meaning that if you have under no context the right to be the aggressor in any circumstances, right? You can defend yourself, you can basically stand up for your rights, but you are not allowed to be the aggressor. And this is best depicted in chapter 2, verse 190 through 193. And it reads, and this is in the context, again, of war, but we can pull from the underlying principle. It says, "You may fight in the cause of God against those who attack you, but do not aggress. God does not love the aggressors. You may kill those who wage war against you, and you may evict them whence they evicted you. Oppression is worse than murder. Do not fight them at the sacred masjid unless they attack you therein. If they attack you, you may kill them. This is the just retribution for those disbelievers. If they refrain, then God is forgiver, most merciful." And then 2.193 reads, freedom of religion. It says, "You may also fight them to eliminate oppression and to worship God freely. If they refrain, you shall not aggress. Aggression is permitted only against the aggressors." So three times in these four verses, we see that aggression is only permitted against the aggressors and that God does not love the aggressors. So under no context do we ever have the right to be the aggressor. Okay, that's one of the major takeaways. This is an umbrella rule in the Quran. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. The other thing that's a great takeaway from these verses is that oppression is worse than murder. God is saying that in a society that oppresses its people, this is worse than if you were to commit mass genocide. Because when you oppress someone, they lose all rights to this one decision they're supposed to make in this world, is if they believe in God wholeheartedly on their own without external influence. When you oppress someone, in essence, what you're trying to do is you're trying to force a certain belief upon them, and you're limiting them from having their own belief, their own understanding, coming to their own conclusions. And this is absolutely detrimental to a society, and it's ironic because the most oppressive societies today are the quote-unquote Islamic countries, right? They take away the freedom from the people. They don't allow them to question the mullahs, the sheikhs, the leaders' interpretation of the religion. And if you do, you're imprisoned, you're punished, you're killed in certain regards. And this is completely contradictory to the Quran. And God actually tells us in the Quran, so this is, keep in mind, God is talking about, you know, attacking in war and what's legitimate to kill someone during war. But one of the questions is, what about day-to-day life, right? Because obviously none of us, for the most part, are going to be in a situation where we're going to be at war. And God gives us guidelines of that as well. In 16:125 through 128, it reads, "How to spread God's message. It says, you shall invite to the path of your Lord with wisdom and kind enlightenment, and debate with them in the best possible manner. Your Lord knows best who has strayed from his path, and he knows best who are the guided ones. And if you punish, you shall inflict an equivalent punishment. But if you resort to patience instead of revenge, it would be better for the patient ones. You shall resort to patience, and your patience is attainable only with God's help. Do not grieve over them, and do not be annoyed by their schemes. God is with those who lead a righteous life. and those who are charitable. And that was chapter 16, verse 125 through 128. And we see here that, you know, God is telling us, in essence, that when we have a dispute with people, that we debate with them in the best possible manner. Now, that's completely open to interpretation, but obviously we're going to lean towards debating with someone in the best manner that we think, that we deem would be fit. You know, we wouldn't raise our voice, we wouldn't be, vulgar, swearing, anything of that nature, that we would talk to them civilly, and hopefully, God willing, come to an understanding. And it says, and if you want to, let's say someone has attacked you, you want to inflict an equivalent punishment, God is authorizing that. But he says, if you resort to patience instead of revenge, it would be better for you. Right? So God is giving the guidelines that we are never allowed to be an aggressor, right? And if we are to basically retaliate with an equivalent retribution, that God is advocating under that context, that we're allowed to basically respond equitably. But if we resort to patience, it's better for us. And this is, it's at odds to what you hear in regards to modern day Christianity, where they say, you know, if someone hits you, you turn the other cheek. God is telling us in the Quran to basically stand up for our rights. You know, God doesn't want people who don't have a spine, who don't speak up, who don't basically are committed to worshiping God freely. And in 42:40 through 43, it reads, although the just requital for an injustice is an equivalent retribution, those who pardon and maintain righteousness are rewarded by God. He does not love the unjust. Certainly those who stand up for their rights when injustice befalls them are not committing any error. The wrong ones are those who treat the people unjustly and resort to aggression without provocation. These have incurred a painful retribution. Resorting to patience and forgiveness reflects a true strength of character. So God is setting the limits, saying if someone aggresses against you, you're allowed to basically give an equivalent response. But if you resort to patience and forgiveness, it's a better trait for you. But at the same time, someone who stands up for their rights is not committing an error. Right? Meaning if you're in a society that's being oppressed, that you know you don't have freedom of religion, you don't have freedom of speech, you don't have freedom of expression, and you stand up for your rights, you, by God, the guidelines of the Quran, are not committing any error unless you aggress. Right? That's the underlying fundamental, is that in no context is a submitter who upholds the Quran and nothing but the Quran is authorized to be the aggressor. So one of this entire takeaway from this is that you're pretty much, you're free to do whatever you want, right? You have freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of travel, freedom to do commerce. And as long as you're not harming anyone else, there's nothing that anyone under the context of the Quran can have against you, right? Meaning you're free to do whatever you want, but as long as you're not harming or victimizing anyone else. Now, this is where it gets interesting in the subject matter, because what does it mean to victimize someone else or harm someone else? Now, obviously, if I go and, you know, punch someone in the face, it's cut and dry. You know, I'm victimizing them. I'm harming them. But what if you have a property and I decide to open a liquor store right next to your home, right? Right next to where your children sleep and your family resides. I want to open up a liquor store and I want to bring in, you know, clientele that is going to get rowdy, is going to get, disruptive, and it's going to affect your day-to-day life. Am I harming you? Yeah, it's on my property. But you realize at some point, basically, where does your property and your rights end, and you're basically victimizing someone else? And this is something that, you can spend volumes and volumes talking about. Under the different contexts, but the underlying principle here is that you're free to do whatever you want as long as you don't victimize anyone else. So what does God have to say about freedom of religion? So in the Quran, God advocates the maximum freedom for the people. That includes freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom to travel, freedom of economy. And we saw this in 2:193. It says, you may also fight them to eliminate oppression and to worship God freely. So this is something in the Quran that God highly, highly advocates, is the worship, the ability to worship God freely, irrespective of your religion. That if you want to worship multiple gods, you want to worship, you know, idols or, you know, whatever it is, that's completely up to you. And no one can take that right away from you. And this is best depicted in chapter 2, verse 256. It reads, no compulsion in religion. It reads, there shall be no compulsion in religion. The right way is now distinct from the wrong way. Anyone who denounces the devil and believes in God has grasped the strongest bond, one that never breaks. God is here, omniscient. So flat out there's no compulsion on religion. So when we see these news stories about people in Saudi Arabia or in Afghanistan or in Pakistan or God knows where, curtailing their people from having this freedom of religion, they're flat out rejecting this Quran. They're flat out not abiding by the Quran, because God's law is that there shall be no compulsion on religion. And there's so many verses that basically emphasize this point. Great chapter that's dedicated to this concept is chapter 109, and it's entitled The Disbelievers. And it reads, "In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, say, O you disbelievers, I do not worship what you worship, nor do you worship what I worship, nor will I ever worship what you worship, nor will you ever worship what I worship. To you is your religion, and to me is my religion." And that's it. If someone wants to disbelieve or someone wants to believe, that's completely up to them. We have no right whatsoever to take that freedom away from an individual. That if someone wants to disbelieve, that's their own neck, that's their own prerogative. And we have no right, in essence, to force people to believe one way or the other. And you see that this is consistently what the disbelievers try to do, is they try to force their belief, their opinion onto other people. And a great example of this is in 788, in regards to Shweb. It says, "The arrogant leaders among his people said, 'We will evict you, O Shweb, together with those who believe with you from our town, unless you revert to our religion.' He said, 'Are you going to force us to believe?'" Right? Shweb is saying, "Hey, are you going to force us to basically revert to your religion?" This is what the disbelievers do. This is what people who do not believe in the Quran do, is that they force people to believe. And in 272, so chapter 2, verse 272 reads, "You're not responsible for guiding anyone. God is the only one who guides whoever chooses to be guided. Any charity you give is for your own good." And 3044, it says, "Whoever disbelieves, disbelieves to the detriment of his own soul, while those who lead a righteous life do so to strengthen and develop their own souls." 1829, "Proclaim, this is the truth from your Lord. Then whoever wills, let him believe, and whoever wills, let him disbelieve." And it's so powerful in the sense that you realize, like, what is this insecurity that people have, that they want to force other people to believe the same way that they do, without using logic and reason to convince them. They think that by force, that this is going to do anyone any good. You look at the example of the messenger. So, like, Muhammad couldn't guide his own uncle. Abraham couldn't guide his own father. Noah couldn't guide his own son. These are, no matter what you do, you can't force people to believe. You're not going to, trick God's system. People have to come to that conclusion on their own. And you have to give people the freedom to decide if they choose to believe on their, believe in God or not. And that's completely up to them. And let's continue on with some of the verses. It says, 1099, it says, "Had your Lord willed, all the people on earth would have believed. Do you want to force the people to become believers?" 8821 through 22, it says, "You shall remind, for your mission is to deliver this reminder. You have no power over them." Right? There's nothing we can do. I mean, you look at these nations that try to force their people to believe. It's as if they believe they have power over these people. That if you force people to give their zakat, to do their salat, that this is going to make them righteous. Right? This is a decision that each individual person has to make themselves, and it's 100% between them and God. And we have to live in a society where we tolerate the freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, which brings us to the next point, the freedom of speech. So what does God have to say in regards to the freedom of speech? We see these examples again, and it's such a shame, Muslims who think that, if someone, does a depiction of the Prophet, that this is the rights to give them the right to wage war and to kill and to do all these horrendous crimes. And God tells us specifically in the Quran how to react in these kind of situations. And in 66 verse 68 and 69, it reads, if you see those who mock our revelations, you shall avoid them until they delve into another subject. If the devil causes you to forget, then as soon as you remember, do not sit with such evil people. The righteous are not responsible for the utterances of those people, but it may help to remind them. Perhaps they may be saved. How awesome is this? That God is saying, look, if someone is mocking God's revelations, that the appropriate response is to avoid them or to not sit with them. You never see in the Quran that God says if someone's mocking, the messengers, the prophets, or God, or his revelations, that the response is to be the aggressor. God is saying, get up and move, you know, leave the situation. Let them, in essence, hurt their own souls. And your action of choosing not to participate in that conversation might serve as a reminder for them. You know, you think of this, people, they complain all the time about the movies, the video games, the messages, the music videos, and they complain that, hey, these are immoral and how dare they depict these things. And the best response is to just avoid it, right? If someone tries to bring a movie, a music video, a song or whatever that you find derogatory that you don't want to support, right? You abandon it, you're voting with your feet. And that's the best way to vote. You know, it doesn't require aggression. It doesn't require you to basically to be vulgar, to be by any means, aggress in any manner. What God is telling us is saying, look, people are free to do whatever they want. And you just, in essence, do your best to be the best submitter you can. And this is going to serve as a reminder for them. And at the end of the day, we're not responsible for the utterances of other people. So let's continue on. So we see, the non-aggression principle, freedom of religion, freedom of speech. Another context in the Quran that God highly advocates is maximum property rights, right? That people have authority over their own property, that you're not going to have someone come in and confiscate property illicitly. This is consistently condemned in the Quran. And one of the perfect examples of this, we talked about in a previous podcast, was in regards to David when he had to rule in regards to the two brothers who owned sheep. So that's in chapter 38, verse 21 through 24, it reads, "Have you received news of defeating men who sneaked into a sanctuary?" So that's David's sanctuary. "When he entered his room, he was startled. They said, 'Have no fear, we are feuding with one another, and we are seeking your fair judgment. Do not wrong us and guide us in the right path.' This brother of mine owns 99 sheep, while I own one sheep. He wants me to mix my sheep with his and continues to pressure me." So this is David's response. This is David's exemplary piety, 38:24. He said, "He's being unfair to you by asking you to combine your sheep with his. Most people who combine their properties treat each other unfairly, except those who believe and work righteousness, and these are so few." So we're seeing that, this is the messenger of God saying most people who combine their properties treat each other unfairly, right? Meaning that if, let's say, for instance, I say, hey, I'm going to take your property, okay, and I'm going to divvy it up to the people, that if this is done by force, then most likely I'm going to treat people unfairly. It's very unlikely that you're going to find someone who's going to do that by force and do it righteously. And this is literally, the only difference between a government and anything else is that the government has the right to do something by force. That if you don't participate, they can fine you, they can throw you in prison, they can, worst comes to worst, some places they'll execute you. Thank God, not in the United States. But you realize, like, this is something that has been the destruction of so many nations, is when governments come in and take people's properties by force. And again, in 4:2 and 4:29, it reads, "You shall hand over to orphans their rightful properties. Do not substitute the bad for the good, and do not consume their properties by combining them with yours. This would be a gross injustice." And 4:29 says, "Oh, you believe, do not consume each other's properties illicitly. Only mutually acceptable transactions are permitted. You shall not kill yourselves. God is merciful towards you." So one of the laws in the U.S. and other parts of the world is eminent domain, where the government can come in and take someone's property, and technically they're supposed to compensate them equitably, but a lot of times it's not, where they will come and take it, give them something subpar in return, if anything, and use it for their own good. Now, some people, they look at China and they say, "Oh wow, look how productive they are. They can launch an airport in a moment's notice." But what they don't take in consideration is how many millions of people's lives they have to basically, in essence, destroy to be able to create that one airport. Now, you can make the justification, "Oh, that's better for society as a whole," but God is consistently telling us that, hey, we are not allowed to victimize anyone. And it says only mutually acceptable transactions are permitted, meaning that if you want to take, like a government wants to take over someone's land to build an airport, a train, a whatever it may be, you have to compensate them equitably, and they have to mutually accept the transaction, meaning it can't be forced on them. One of the things is, God willing, in regards to the Quran, is the difference between a republic and a democracy. So in a republic, or let's start with a democracy since that's more popular known, it's majority rule, right? Something happens, the people vote, and whatever's the majority is the outcome. And oftentimes what you end up having is the 51% majority ramming down the decision on the 49% minority. And this is not a Quranic system. God tells us repeatedly in the Quran that basically, again, mutually acceptable transactions and to consult one another. 42, see if I can find that really quick. In 42:38, it says, they responded to their Lord by observing the contact prayer Salat. Their affairs are decided after due consultation among themselves. And from our provisions to them, they give to charity. So we can never be in a situation where, if we wanted to follow the Quran in a submitting nation, where the majority of people basically ram their decision down the minority, we have to come to a decision where everyone is left satisfied. And it doesn't matter how long that takes, and God willing, we can talk more about how that would work theoretically in a submitting society, but it's something, again, to take in consideration. So let's continue on. In 283, verse 85, it reads, we made a covenant with the children of Israel. You shall not worship except God. You shall honor your parents and regard the relatives, the orphans, the poor. You shall treat the people amicably. You shall observe the contact prayer Salat. Give the obligatory charity zakat. But you turned away except a few of you, and you became averse. So this is God addressing the children of Israel in the Quran. And it says in 84, we made a covenant with you that you shall not shed your blood, nor shall you evict each other from your homes. You agreed and bore witness. Yet here you are killing each other and evicting some of you from their homes, banding against them sinfully and maliciously. Even when they surrendered, you demanded ransom from them. Evicting them was prohibited for you in the first place. Do you believe in part of the scripture and disbelieve in part? What should be the retribution for those among you who do this, except humiliation in this life and a far worse retribution on the day of resurrection? God is never unaware of anything you do. So, again, God is condemning, basically evicting people from their homes unjustly. You can't just kick someone out. You have to have the utmost respect for people's lives and properties. The next concept that I want to touch on in regards to guidelines of the Quran for a believing nation is the equality of all people. So a lot of the concepts I'm taking are coming from Appendix 36 in the Quran. Highly recommend to basically read that appendix if you want. And God willing, what I'm trying to do is just break it up into different sections and talk about each one through, inshallah, a couple podcasts. So the next topic is the equality of all people. So guaranteed human rights for all people, regardless of their race, color, creed, sex, social status, financial situation, or political affiliation. So in the Quran, God considers men and women equal. 3195 says, their Lord responded to them, I never fail to reward any worker among you for any work you do. Be you male or female, you're equal to one another. So God is telling us, as far as God is concerned, the male and the female are equal to one another in regards to righteousness, in regards to belief. Now, this is not to say that men and women are one and the same. In 432, it reads, men and women endowed with unique qualities. It says, you shall not covet the qualities bestowed upon each other by God. The men enjoy certain qualities and the women enjoy certain qualities. You may implore God to shower you with his grace. God is fully aware of all things. Now, God created man and woman, as far as God is concerned, as equals. But, each sex has a certain quality that God bestowed upon them. And we're not to covet the qualities of the other. Right? Meaning that certain qualities were bestowed upon the men, certain qualities were bestowed upon the women, and these are actually made to be compatible with one another. So God willing, when we get married, we'll be, in essence, in a union that's best for both parties. So let's continue. In 712, it reads, he said, what prevented you? Okay, this is actually interesting. Satan was the first racist, right? Satan was the first individual that we have in history that was a flat-out racist. And what's interesting is in the story of Satan and the creation, God created Adam. and then had all the angels prostrate before Adam, except for Satan. This is Satan's response. So he said, what prevented you? So God said, what prevented you from prostrating when I ordered you? Satan responds, he said, I am better than he. You created me from fire and created him from mud. Right? And God is, for that, is kicking him out of God's kingdom. So we're not allowed to be racist. You know, in a submitting society, everyone has equal rights, irrespective of gender, irrespective of, you know, race, creed, social status, financial status, political affiliation. Doesn't matter if you agree with them or not, they're a human being and they have certain inalienable rights. 5:8 says, O you people, O you who believe, you shall be absolutely equitable and observe God when you serve as witnesses. Do not be provoked by your conflicts with some people into committing injustice. You shall be absolutely equitable, for it is more righteous. You shall observe God. God is fully cognizant of everything you do. So again, God is saying, you know, we have to be absolutely equitable when we serve as witnesses. In another verse, it even says, even against ourselves, we have to be equitable. Meaning that if we have to bear witness against ourselves, against, you know, something that happened, we have to be honest. We can't bear false witness. And in 49:13, it reads, O people, we created you from the same male and female and rendered you distinct peoples and tribes that you may recognize one another. The best among you in the sight of God is the most gracious, most righteous. God is omniscient, cognizant. So it says the best among you in the sight of God is the most righteous. Apologies for that. And again, God is saying that here that, hey, he created the human being and he allowed it to basically form different peoples and tribes that we may recognize one another, right? You're going to see some people of different ethnicities, different backgrounds, different cultures. And this is God's system. We have to respect one another. Under no guidelines do we have the right, again, to aggress against one another because we don't agree with, you know, maybe their culture, or we think differently of their creed, their background, political affiliation, you name it. So another context concept in the Quran is the respect for people's privacy. And there's a number of verses. I pulled this one in particular. I think this one kind of sums it up. It's in 49:12. It says, O you who believe, you shall avoid any suspicion, for even a little bit of suspicion is sinful. You shall not spy on one another, nor shall you backbite one another. This is as abominable as eating the flesh of your dead brother. You certainly abhor this. You shall observe God, God is Redeemer, most merciful. So God is, you know, giving us this very kind of like gross depiction to just show us how nasty of an act it is to be suspicious, to spy on one another, to backbite one another. And we see this, it's kind of funny that recently, you know, with the Edward Snowden leaks in regards to the NSA wiretapping, that, you know, what are they doing? One, they're being suspicious of everyone. And then two, they're spying on every single, you know, American citizen and so many more individuals abroad. And this is condemned in the Quran. And this actually cut and talks to the next point, which is in regards to transparency. So, you know, governments have a history of not being transparent, hiding things from the people, and in particular, partaking into conspiracies. So 58:10, it says, secret conspiracy is the devil's idea through which he seeks to hurt those who believe. However, he cannot hurt them against God's will, and God the believer shall trust. So, you know, anyone who wants to basically keep something as a secret conspiracy, they're only hurting themselves, and God condemns this, and he says it's the devil's idea. And you see it consistently, you know, political disaster starts out as a conspiracy before the truth is brought to light and people are known. Like Edward Snowden is a perfect example. People were saying for years that the NSA has been infringing on people's privacy, and they denied it, and then it became known that no, actually they have been for many, many years. And, you know, for the longest time, anyone who believed that was considered a kook. But, you know, truth prevails. and so that, in a nutshell, I mean, let's just kind of summarize. So we have the non-aggression principle, we have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, maximum respect for people's properties and lives, the equality of all the people, utmost respect for people's privacy, transparency of government, and unanimous consensus that, you know, in essence, it's not the majority rule. It's that we look at the guidelines of the Quran when we make our decisions. But throughout all this, you know, God encourages the people to believe for their own good. God doesn't force the people to be believers. If he wanted to, we would all be believers. So God is giving people the choice, and he incentivizes us, and he encourages us. And it says, a nation that upholds God's laws is guaranteed prominence among the nations of the world, victory, prosperity, and happiness. A nation that upholds God's laws is guaranteed to be a great nation. This is not a mere idealistic dream, since God is in full control. His guarantees and promises are done. And we see a couple examples of this in the Quran, where if you apply God's laws, you're guaranteed success. And this goes both for the individual and the nation. In 7163, it reads, observing the commandments brings prosperity. Remind them of the community by the sea who desecrated the Sabbath. When they observed the Sabbath, the fish came to them abundantly. And when they violated the Sabbath, the fish did not come. We thus afflicted them as a consequence of their transgression. Another example is of Noah. Jonah. Jonah went to a nation and the people believed. And it reads in 10:98. It says, any community that believes will surely be rewarded for believing. For example, the people of Jonah, when they believed, we relieved the humiliating retribution they have been suffering in this world and we made them prosperous. So by believing, God guarantees us prosperity. And you see across history that the nations that are the closest to God's belief, that they apply the non-aggression principle, they apply freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of commerce, that they are going to be the most prosperous. And the closer we basically abide by these laws, the more prosperous we will be as a society. And it reads in 565 through 66, if the people of the scripture, Jews, Christians, and Muslims believe and maintain righteousness, righteous life, we will remit their sins and admit them into blissful heaven. They have observed the Torah, the gospel, and what is revealed herein from their Lord. They would have enjoyed provisions from above them and from beneath their feet. Some of them are righteous, but most of them are evildoers. And 796, it says, if only the people of various communities believed and maintained a righteous life, we would have showered them with blessings from the heaven and the earth. So we know, you know, from the Quran that God is the one who controls happiness. God is the one who allows people to go through misery. And it's completely up to us. If as a nation, as an individual within a nation, we come to respect these laws and we come to abide by these laws, we will be successful both as an individual and as a nation. And there's nothing we can do, in essence, to change other people's minds on this. It's something as a nation we have to come to a consensus. And there's an expression is that you cannot legislate morality. Meaning I can't pass a law and just have everyone all of a sudden say, hey, immorality is condemned. Everyone has to be moral and ethical. And imagine that overnight all corruption, all fraud, criminal activity would just stop, right? It's absurd. And God understands this, that God, in essence, encourages the individual, and individuals make up society, and societies make up nations. And if we have the best underlying ethics and morals within ourselves, that we will succeed both as an individual and as a society. And in 10:107-108, it reads, all power belongs to God. If God touches you with hardship, none can relieve it except he, and when he blesses you, no force can prevent his grace. He bestows it upon whomever he chooses from among his servants. He is forgiver, most merciful. Proclaim, O people, the truth has come to you here and from your Lord. Whoever is guided for his own good, and whoever goes astray to his own detriment. I am not a guardian over you. So, praise God. It's very profound when you actually read the Quran and you realize that, you know, God is advocating these things, because when you look at what the quote-unquote Muslim world has done with this religion, it's absolutely disgusting. They're not by any means abiding by the Quran. They're not applying any of these principles from the Quran. And you're seeing that consistently they rank as the least prosperous nations in the world. And there's a reason for that. It's because they are the farthest away from God's message. And you look at a country like the United States, you look at places like, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, for the most part, where they allow, you know, freedom of religion, freedom of commerce, freedom of expression, you know, a lot of places in Europe too, and they're prosperous. And there's a reason for that. It's because they're abiding by God's laws. And when you do that, you're prosperous. And it's something that we shouldn't take lightly. God willing, in future podcasts, I'm going to try to talk about some of the other topics in this realm, being Quran and family, Quran in economics, Quran in the criminal justice system, and maybe one or two other topics in this regard. So I got my work cut out for me, but inshallah, it'd be good. And God willing, if I made any errors or said anything incorrectly, God forgive me. We're all students from the Quran. We're all trying to basically apply the wisdom of the Quran to our lives and spread the message in the best possible manner. God willing, all the believers will come take away the correct understanding, and we'll be guided and grow our souls together. Until next time, peace and God bless.